Welcome to Agency Highway. This is a podcast for digital agencies and freelancers who want to grow their business, earn more, and work less. Each episode, you'll hear from agency owners that are killing it, meet epic people that can help you along your journey, or just listen to me ramble on about something I think is cool. Head to agencyhighway.com for transcripts, action notes, and to join the community. I'm your host, James Rose. Now, let's get into it. This podcast is brought to you by ContentSnare. ContentSnare helps digital agencies get content from their clients on time, in the right format, without email. If you've ever needed to get content from clients, you'll know how painful it can be. You end up constantly chasing them for weeks and months, and by the time it's ready, there's a 900-long email trail full of massive images and a couple of brochures from 6 years ago. ContentSnare makes this a thing of the past by collecting content from your clients in the right format the first time and does all the chasing for you. Try it on your next project by signing up at ContentSnare.com. G'day and welcome back to Agency Highway. I'm your host, James Rose, and today I have Chris Castillo on the line, who I've just discovered I pronounced his name right the first time. That's amazing. Thanks for joining me, Chris.
Oh, I'm super stoked to be here, man.
It's so good to have you on, because I've seen you around in like so many Facebook groups. This industry is kind of funny, right? Like, you see the same people everywhere and we're all in each other's groups because you've got your own Facebook group now. And that's actually one of the things that prompted me to get you on, because it was Supercharge Your Web Agency.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, he's like changing a bit, right? Because you're an agency, obviously, and then now you're sort of moving into this space where you're helping other agencies. So before I go and destroy your actual story, I'll let you cover it. But you know what? I can't remember if I actually sprung, this is going to be springing on you or not, or if it was in my question list, but what's the best thing that's happened to you this year or in the last 12 months?
Oh yeah, that's you're catching me off guard, but the best thing that's happened to me in the last 12 months, let me think what that might be.
I'm sorry for not warning you. Normally I do, and then I totally
that's forget. Okay. it's good to be put on the spot once in a while. I think the best thing that's happened to me, I got asked by a local, it's a company here in my city who does a lot of like small business courses and stuff. And I got invited to do this like small business course. And they asked me to do like 30% of the content, which was crazy.
Wow.
It's a ton of content. And it's like 8 hours of recorded video. Like, that's post-production and everything. Anyways, it's like funded by the government, and they're giving away a bunch of grants to like small business owners to fund some digital marketing efforts. And it's just been like a really cool ride for me, because I kind of had to put myself in a uncomfortable situation, because like I'm not used to being on camera. I'm not like super comfortable being in front of like lights and, you know, people watching me and directing me and all that other stuff. And so it was definitely a new experience for me, but I'm excited, because it's one of the reasons, I think, and maybe we'll talk about this a little bit in the podcast, but one of the reasons why I've taken so many steps in my business recently, because there's this particular project has the potential of really scaling things up for me and really opening up a whole ton of opportunities. And it's just, it's been crazy. This whole year has been just a roller coaster. Awesome.
Yeah. That's massive, man. You just made me think about a whole potential other podcast episode with the grants and stuff, because that's a big thing here too in Brisbane. They do this like small business grant, and they like match funding up to 10K or something. So wow. You spend $5,000, the government will put in $5,000. And I know a lot of people use that as a marketing channel. So total side note to this entire episode, if you're listening, maybe it's worth checking out if there are any small business grants that could be used on digital marketing or websites, and seeing if you can use that in your marketing. You know, you could even help them write the grant or get someone, because I know that's a thing. Like, they partner up with people that are good at getting the grants, and yeah, that's a cool marketing channel. I've even seen ads for it.
Yeah, that definitely. I know of people that have actually done that and have had some success doing it. I think if you really figure it out, I think that could be a killer lead gen strategy.
Yeah. Anyway, there's your takeaway for the episode. Let's wrap it up there. Yeah. all right. So tell me about your agency and your Facebook group, and, you know, I guess the ride.
Yeah, cool, man. So my company is Propel Digital Media Solutions. And so I started my company about 2 years ago doing just web design and stuff. But and I'll just do a very quick intro, but it's just, you know, very early on into my business, I realized that there's a big difference between creating a website and actually solving business problems. Mm-hmm. And I knew that one of the keys to really achieving the kind of results that businesses really need is to have a really solid strategy in place. And so very early on into my business, I pretty much just got obsessed with SEO and digital marketing in general. And so ever since then, like, my business has just been focused around doing web design and digital marketing, but doing it in a way that's powered by research and strategy. And so that's sort of what differentiates me, or I try to use to differentiate me from other agencies or other businesses, is it's just really focusing on the strategic and research aspect of the entire project. And I think a lot of the times that's been what's been missing for most businesses. And even when I've stepped into projects sort of halfway in, or maybe after they've had like a fresh redesign and they're like, well, I don't know what's not working. That always seems to be at the core, right? And so it's one of the things that I think has allowed me to be so successful with a lot of the projects that I've worked on. So I've things have been going really well, and my agency's been scaling a little bit. I've hired on 2 designers recently. Wow, and nice. So we just had a ton of success recently. And so where I've been. I think one of the things that I focused on recently was just creating this Facebook group and trying to help other people identify things that maybe aren't working well for them that I've been able to implement myself to get things to the point, you know, to where they are right now for me. So that's been going well.
And that's pretty much how our Facebook group started too. Yeah. I mean, obviously there was a little bit of an ulterior motive because of Content Snare, and we were, I thought we would get a bunch of our target audience together in one spot. But it's grown into much more than that, right? And I'm seeing you do it, sharing in the helpful content there all the time. That's what it's like when you're building a group. You just share helpful stuff and the stuff that worked for you. And that's pretty much all I did for the first year, just to get people interested and out onto the email list and whatever. And yeah, I mean, it's grown into so much more than that now. I've written a whole post on how awesome the Facebook group's been for us. We just crossed 4,000 members. So that's
congratulations, man.
Cheers. I probably have a bunch of people, like inactive people, that I need to delete. I've seen a bunch of people doing that recently, removing inactive people, because apparently it helps Facebook's algorithm. I don't know. I need to do more research. But one thing I wanted to mention there, you were talking about, you've realized, you know, a website's so much more than a website. It's like a strategy. That has come up like a bunch of times on this podcast. Like, this is going to be episode like 28 or something. And so we haven't had many episodes, but I reckon this has come up like 6 or 7 times, right? That was my point. And so, and we even had I had an interview with Troy Dean of WP Elevation, and it was all about website maintenance plans.
Right.
It was so funny. It went down this completely different thing about how you shouldn't be selling maintenance, and you should be selling like basically a solution, like and including marketing and all this sort of stuff. So I'll link that up in the show notes.
Cool.
Because that was, I had someone message me about that and say, you know, that episode changed the entire way I think about business. And I was like, holy crap, that is cool.
I did catch that episode too, actually. He's a genius, man. Like, he knows what he's talking about, and I agree 100%. I mean, and that goes with just about anything that you do really online. It really all comes down to how you position things and things like that, right?
Yeah, totally. And like, when you're selling something like that, it's an investment, not a cost. I kind of see it that way. You know, if you're spending money on something that is going to give you more clients, it's much more easy to justify in your mind than spending money on something you think you just have to have, like a website. It's like just a total cost at that point, like a brochure or something, you know? Anyway, total sidetrack. I love your story, I guess, like just to see that you've wanting to help other people. So yeah, I'm having to dig through some other stuff you've written here, because I totally screwed up before this episode and sent you the wrong document, I guess. But it was just a little miscommunication, and you've answered questions that I wasn't even going to ask. So I'm like,
well, that's okay.
We can get into those at the end anyway, because we talked about our topic potentially today as finding solid outsourcing partners, and you recommended this, and I love that because it enables you to have like that agency style effect without having to run a multidisciplinary agency, right? Like if you're doing Facebook ads and Google ads and all that sort of stuff, it can, people do it. Amber, who has been on this podcast before, is doing that. But actually, a lot of it comes through finding outsourcing partners where you can get other people in to do some of the work for you. And provide that full agency effect. And then, you know, maybe later you can replace those people with full-time employees if that's the way you want to go. But yeah, anyway, this is your show. Just thought I'd get my thoughts in there. So tell me about how your business works with outsourcing partners and how you found them and any tips that you have to find good ones.
Yeah, sure, man. At the end of the day, I've always, whenever I communicate with clients or anything like that, I always refer to my business as we, right? Like I always use the term we or us, like we're going to do this and our team is going to do this. And I mean, for the most part at the beginning, it was always just me, right? But, and it's so fat, it felt kind of weird saying we and me and us and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, I think I always had it at the back of my mind that I don't know what I don't know. And one of these days I may need somebody's help. And I don't want my potential prospects or clients to think that like I'm not able to, even if I'm not able to do whatever it is that they need me to do, I want to still be able to like to source that for them. Like I don't want them to have to go and shop around. Like nobody wants to do that, right?
Yeah.
They want you to take care of everything for them. Like that's why they're going out there looking for a digital marketer or a web designer. I mean, they call a web designer, but really at the end of the day, it's like digital marketing is what they want, right? And so I don't want to be the one that says like, oh yeah, you know, that's just not something I do. Like I'm going to go out there. I'm going to make sure that I find the right people and I'm going to make sure that they do the work to my standards. Right. And so it's funny because one of the first outsourcing partners that I ever had was a complete train wreck.
It was always the case. The first times.
Well, you know, it taught me a lot of lessons though, because I realized the importance of qualifying your outsourcing partners, right? Mm-hmm. Like we talk a lot about in our business, we talk a lot about qualifying clients, right? And you got to make sure that, you know, they're not too small and that they value your work and all that other stuff. But when it comes to outsourcing partners, if I had to give somebody like the biggest lesson that I've learned is, excuse me, is you got to qualify your outsourcing partners. I actually just recently had somebody reach out to me and they just had the worst experience with an outsourcing partner. I mean, like it's like as bad as you can get it. And they're like, you know, I don't know what to do, you know? And I was like, dude, I feel bad for you. But you know, one thing you have to understand is that as a business owner, it all comes down on your shoulders, right? If something doesn't work, man, it's your fault. Like one way or another, whether you want to see it that way or not, you've got to look at the process under which all this stuff happened, figure out where you went wrong. But one of the things that I know that went wrong in that scenario was like he just failed to qualify his outsourcing partner. He just basically said, oh, you know, they're going to throw me work and I'm just going to do the work. There's times where somebody has wanted to do business with me where they wanted to refer work to me where I've turned the work down. And I did that because I knew that they were very inexperienced at the time. And I couldn't trust them to have qualified that lead and to have communicated things properly to them before I got involved.
Yeah.
Where I know that would be a good relationship for me and my business going forward. And so I think that's really important. I mean, we talk about, you know, don't take on these bottom of the barrel clients because they're going to take up just as much work, but you know, you're going to be making less money. And at the, you know, I look at outsourcing partners the same way. It's like, you know, you can have somebody throwing you a bunch of work, but if they're not the right partner for you, you're going to end up doing so much more work. I think you're going to probably end up getting into situations where, you know, you're just going to maybe end up doing all the work yourself, and where maybe the work's supposed to be split in a way, in a certain way or whatever. And so,
anyways, just quickly, I just want to, I think I had the complete wrong idea. I just want to quickly define what an outsourcing partner is. I had it in my mind that this is you outsourcing to other people. So this is actually, it's both. It is. It's just a bi-directional thing. Both.
No. Because see, the thing is, like, when I talk about outsourcing partners, it's basically, look, at the end of the day, there's things that I'm not going to be able to do that I want to be able to provide to my clients. Mm. And I want to find somebody who's going to be the best person to do that for them. It just so happens that I happen to do quite a bit of things. Like, I'll do PPC, I'll do SEO, I'll do web design. And so that's like a huge chunk of most of the marketing that they would need. Like, I do content creation, I do content marketing. So it's like, well, what do I not do? I hate copywriting, even though, I know we talked about, brand story and how all that stuff changed my perception of copywriting. But at the end of the day, like, I believe in the phrase, like, aces in their places, right? And so I know I'm not the best person to do copywriting, and I know that there's really good people that are very talented at writing copy. I let them do it. And so, like, I have this one copywriter who I have literally thrown all of the copywriting to, and I feel bad for her because she's probably feels overwhelmed with all the work that I've thrown her. But I'm sure she's not complaining, but you know, she does a really good job. And so she's my copywriting outsourcing partner. Like, that's the way I look at it, right? When I talk about copywriting with my clients, I say, you know, yeah, my copywriter is going to do this. And it's my copywriter. It's not, a copywriter that I found. You know, it's not, I don't communicate it that way. It's my team, right?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, the quality of work that she puts forward is reflective on my business. And so I take it that way. I take it very seriously. And I'll even, you know, I'll even go out of my way to really take control of a project, even from like a copywriting perspective, for example, and be like, you know, now this isn't going to work. Like, I need it to be more like this, or I need this to go in this direction. And I manage that relationship. I manage the work and how it it goes, right? So I'm very much hands-on. And so that's kind of like what I think people need to do, is establish these relationships with talented people, but don't just offload the work and expect things to get done properly. You got to be there to manage every step of the way, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. And so, yeah. And so
that's your business model, right? Like, you are the single point of contact for the client, and you're probably going to be marking up these services and making a bit more out of it. So that's what your role is. It's almost like the project manager business model, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I actually didn't know that until that it would be this way until just recently, because it was just recently that I hired on two designers, and I kind of started pulling back and from being like the person doing all the work. And it's funny, 'cause like the first week that I had these designers on board, all this work came in, and I was like, okay, I started delegating and everything, right? And then I stopped, and I had this moment for a little bit where I was like, okay, like, what do I do now? Because I was used to doing all this stuff. And I was like, oh, I don't even know what to do. And then I was like, okay, well, I can start working on my processes. I can start working on systems. I can start, and I started focusing on that stuff. But it was really weird, because then I had so little control. I felt like I had so little control, and I felt like things were just going on like automatic or something, but there was like something I wasn't really getting quite right. And then it clicked in. Like, I was like, oh, you know, I need to be managing all of these relationships. I need to be really managing everybody. Like, every step of the way, I have to have touch points, regular touch points, and making sure that everybody's on the same page with everything. And like, that kind of falls into place with a post I put up on my group about creating resources for all of your connected, you know, partners or whatever, whether it's copywriters or staff members or whatever. Everybody has to be on the same page, and like, there has to be one person captaining that sort of strategy, right? And I think that's now where I find myself. Like, that's where I've now transitioned into, and I've figured it out, you know, at this point, that's what I need to do. Right. But
yeah,
it's crazy. It's been,
That's awesome. So what's, I guess we should dig into how to actually build this like network of outsourcing partners and how to find good ones, how to vet them. This is actually like a little pet hate of mine. I've been on a bunch of rants about this recently about like how to find referrals for things. In fact, I almost wanted to have a solo episode where I was just ranting about this. But because this is not just for outsourcing partners, but this is like every time you ask for a referral or you're trying to find someone that does a certain service, right? You get so many referrals that are just like they're token throwaway referrals because it's like someone from their BNI group or like just some crap, some dude that they've met, some girl they've met at a meeting, and that person said they did websites. Oh yeah, you should go and talk to that guy. And I hate it because most of the time they have no idea if that person's any good or not, especially with BNI groups where they're like, expected referrals, and they like literally write down like how many referrals you've given to the group that month or whatever. It's just so poisonous because there's crappy referrals. And so what I've started working out is that you have to ask why. You know, you got to say, why are you referring me to this person? Have you worked with them? Like what that, you know? And that is a huge difference. Is it something like that when you're finding outsourcing partners, like the same kind of battles?
It is, man. I think it just comes down to like I think we have processes for digging into things and finding out what we need to know. We have these processes for other things, but we don't think to use it for things like this, right? Like, yeah. You know, when you talk to a business about, you know, what it is that they need, like they have a problem that needs to be solved, what's one of the things that you're always told to do is just keep asking questions, ask why. And that's what I do is like, you know, I had a post a little while ago where I was asking for social media managers, like recommendations for social media managers. Dude, I got bombarded with recommendations, and like, I was like, okay, no, I expected it, right? I expected totally. It. I was like, okay, well, whatever. This is the nature of things. Like there's a billion different social media marketers out there or managers, and some that have like just started last month, and there's others that have been like really huge and successful. And
yeah.
So how do you vet them? And I just went through a process of just like interviewing them, like not like I would schedule calls where I could. And like, I just feel like I'm a good judge of character. Like, I think I've always just been a pretty good judge of character, and I can kind of understand when somebody's bullshitting me.
Yeah.
Or if they're actually like legitimately hardworking people. And it's like, I think another thing that people always talk about is like you should always hire character and not talent, I think it is. Something along those lines. It's like you can teach people the skills, but you can't teach people the work ethic, right? And I think that's one of the things that I focus on. Obviously, I want the skill.
Yeah.
But that's more of like if you're hiring on, right? Because you can train like that
full-time person that you're training. Yeah, it's a kind of different story. If you're working with someone that you want to refer work to and they're like another business or a contractor, then you kind of expect they've got some skill, you know?
Right. So at that point, it becomes like, okay, well, I need somebody with skills, obviously, but what I'm really, one of my primary vetting conditions is like, well, are they committed to their business as much as I am? Are they the kind of, you know, the kind of person or business owner that's going to be like, you get two revisions and then like, that's it. And then they just charge you and nickel and dime you for everything. That's not how I do business. Like, and that's not how I like to work with other people. Right. And you'll see like, and I'm sure you know, but with my group, like I give away tons of stuff. Like, in my group, I can't tell you how many screen shares I've done, how many calls I've taken. Like, I make myself super available to everybody. But the way that I look at it is like, I'm sorry, I'm going on a bit of a tangent.
No, it's fine.
The way that I see it is like this, is like my outsourcing partners, I look at it like a franchise. A franchise is going to offer you a brand and a certain amount of reach. Through their network and marketing channels, but they still offer you support. You know what I mean? Like they, your success is going to be their success. And so with me, that's what my Facebook group is all about, right? Like if I, and look, when I created my Facebook group, I was like super transparent about my motives behind it. Like I told everybody, like what I want to do is I want to create a group that can help support all these web designers. I want to make you guys more successful. I want you guys to sell more, to close bigger deals, to close more deals. And the reason why I want to do that is because I want you to get to the point where you're successful, you're getting enough business for, you know, eventually some of these deals that they close are going to need marketing services. Yeah. And, you know, obviously if I've been there every step of the way, they trust me and I've helped them along the way, then they're going to, a certain percentage of those people are going to throw work my way.
Absolutely.
And that's just the way it is, right? I mean, everybody wants good business relationships, right? And I think that's my way of sort of creating that for myself.
Yep.
And so I take these calls and everything because I want to nurture that, and I want to make sure that I'm giving them, I'm setting them up as much as I can to succeed, right? And so I look, when I start looking at my outsourcing partners, I'm looking at like, well, who's coachable, right? Who's going to listen to my advice? Like, who takes their business seriously, right? Who is like determined to do really good work no matter what, right? At their point in their stage at where they are. Like these are all the things that I look at, and I vet, I qualify all of my partners through this process. And I mean, obviously at the end of the day, it's still going to be a bit of a trial and error thing. Like you're always going to get it wrong sometimes, right?
Yep. And I was just, that was going to be my next question, was like, what happens if someone slips through? Because it always does, right? Like we do software development, and man, we've hired so many developers over the years. Like, I don't know, it's got to be at least 30, maybe 40 developers. Like, you know, whether that's just for little projects or whatever, for WordPress guys, Rails guys, Angular guys. And you know, at the start, we'd probably screw it up 3 out of 4 times, and now it's like 1 out of 4 times. Like that's the difference. Yeah. We still screw it up, and you've got to jump on it quickly because that can really bite you if you've got a bad dev.
But that's just it. I think you gotta take the approach of like big company HR, right? Like hire often and fire quickly. That's the saying, right? It's like if you know that it's not working out early, like. There's another saying that I heard, which I sort of like really have, it's implanted in my mind so much, is like the way that a business relationship starts is the way that business relationship is most likely to end. So if you start off on the right foot, then you're probably going to be in a long-term relationship where, you know, at the end of the day, if you guys end up splitting ways, it's because of good reasons, right? You guys have scaled to the point where you guys don't need each other or something along those lines. But if something starts off rocky, you know, you'd need to nip it in the bud right away or address that right away, right? I had, during my initial hiring process for the two designers that I hired on board, I found one designer who was just, I was blown away by her portfolio. She just had really good stuff. I hired her on, and then the first day I had to fire her because she joined my Slack channel. I have an onboarding process now for staff members now. And so I onboarded her into my company Slack channel. And I assigned her to a project, and I said, look, let me know, just get yourself familiarized with the project and let me know if you have any questions. And she didn't respond back for like 24 hours. And I was like, you know, I gave her the benefit of the doubt, because, you know, at the end of the day, you don't know what's going on in people's lives. I try to be that kind of person that's just like, you know what, like give people the benefit of the doubt, right? And I gave it another, like, I think 12 or 24 hours. And then I was just like, you know what, whatever it is that's going on, I think it's, I just need to just cut it off here. So I ended up letting her go and hiring somebody else. And sure enough, like the girl's like grandfather died or something. And it's horrible. I felt really terrible for her. But as an agency, if you're going to be making these sort of decisions, I think you have to get into this position where you feel comfortable making these decisions quickly, and understanding that it's for the best. Right. And so I think that's just a necessary thing, man.
Yeah, I think so too. And it, you know, even when bad things happen, it's still like you still should be communicating. Like that's one of the biggest things I find with any, you know, develop, like any staff member, contractor, whatever, communication is the absolute number one thing.
100%.
A lot of people think like that. Our tagline for our agency used to be web developers that respond to emails, finish the job and don't suck. And like the bit that the first one being respond to emails, because that was one of the biggest complaints we had is like, you know, such and such just never responds, takes forever to respond. And that's always been something I try to pride myself on is getting back to people at least on time. I mean, it's getting harder as I get more email, but yeah, I'm still trying to stay on top of that. There's one thing with that fire fast analogy that you, it sort of, I just realized that I kind of have a bit of a problem with that. Because I totally agree with it. But me, like most people, I suck at firing. It sounds like you've got it down. Whereas I'm like, oh, you know, I'm not sure. I'm like real bad at firing. if it's someone else, I'd be like, yeah, you should fire that person. You know, like someone telling me about this, someone in their business. I'm like, yeah, definitely need to get rid of that person. But when it comes to my business, I'm like, oh, you know, maybe it's, and I'm second guess myself. I was just thinking a cool way around that because I know I'm not the only one. I talk to so many people who are bad at firing and don't like doing it. Is to hire project based at first, right? That could be a potential way around that, in that you're just going to work with this person for one project and then see, you know, how they operate, how it is, and then you could hire them after that. You know, that could work.
That's actually what I ended up, what I did end up doing actually is I part of the two the designers that I have right now, they're actually on a 3-month sort of term where we're, cause really at the end of the day, look, I mean, they may not like me, right? They might not like working for me, and I don't want to have somebody working for me that doesn't want to work for me, and vice versa, right? So, and I was really transparent about it. I just said, like, let's just do this for like the first 3 months and see how things go. And if you like it, and if I like it, and we work well together, then we'll extend this to like a full time thing, right? But I think that's a great idea, is to do sort of like a trial thing, right? Like whether it's project based or just on a term basis or whatever, it makes it easier, I think, for everybody. If things aren't working, you just say, well, you know what, the time's up and it's not really what I thought it would be, or whatever you want to say. I mean, I'm not super good at firing people. I'm like a very, like I try, I'm very empathetic with people, and I try, and I probably wouldn't feel comfortable firing somebody if like, it was like a year in and we've had this like long working relationship, I'd probably be like, oh man, I don't know how to do this. But I think when it's early on, I think it makes it a lot easier. And I think that's one of the reasons why hire often, fire quickly is like a good kind of policy, because I think it takes away a little bit of that, right? A little bit of that edge, I think, on both ends, I guess.
Yeah. I can't remember what I was going to say now. It was something talking about, oh God, no, I got nothing. Where should we, what should we talk about next?
That's okay.
Hiring, I was oh man, I'm completely gone. I got to take more notes, but I just want to get some kind of a set of steps that, you know, you go through that of hiring, you know, so just to sort of wrap all this up into an easy to follow process, like where you start, you know, and what, where you're spending that time. So, you know, from like step one, it sounded like you put, you know, requests out on Facebook or whatever. Is that how you got your initial?
I've actually found outsourcing partners through like so many different channels. Like Facebook is obviously going to be like my primary one, because I'm like literally I live on Facebook. I'm there all the time. But like I've even had a designer that I sort of sourced through Fiverr, and they've worked.
Wow.
Like, and I know, and that's what that's the reaction I get all the time. But you know what though, like the Fiverr situation was a whole different thing than doing the designers, right? Like I think your process has to sort of adjust to maybe the platform, because like with the Facebook stuff, like it was more of like, okay, let me see what you can do and send me your portfolio, and then let me talk. Let's have a conversation, and I want to get an idea of the person, the individual who I'm going to be working with, and to identify whether they're going to be a good fit with me, right? That's kind of the process that I went through with the Facebook side of things. With And that's kind of, and that's in general the process that I go with through my Facebook group too. Like if somebody says, you know, oh, do you have any copywriting work? I'll ask them to send me some examples. I'll set up a call. We'll have a chat. We'll figure out if we jive or not, and then we kind of go from there. And then usually I always with any partner, I always do like a trial run of something. Like I want to know on like a low key or low importance type of project, I want to know how things work out. If things don't work out well, then, you know, no biggie, like that one little aspect of that project, I can either redo it or we can just use whatever we have so far. So, you know, I have a project right now that I got a copywriter doing one page.
Yeah, and that's massive. Like the small task thing, just so you can test them. Same as devs, like developers, you always get them to do one little bit. And you can check out their comment style, their code style, and make sure you thoroughly check it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and with the Fiverr side of things, it was sort of the same thing, but with Fiverr, it's actually a lot easier. I actually have also sourced copywriters through a website called textbroker.com. Okay. And again, like a lot of people are like, really, if you got good copywriters, like I couldn't find anybody good. I put the Fiverr and the TextBroker guys, I put them through the same sort of process. I will put out like a kind of like a contest project where I'll say, okay, I'll, you know, do this one little tiny thing for me and it'll be like a small thing. So it'll probably cost me like on Fiverr, it'll probably cost me like $10 or something per person. And so I'll just send that request out, the same request to like 15 different people. At the end of the day, it's going to cost me $150. Okay, whatever. It's a write-off. Look, you're going to get 15 people to actually work with you, to get an idea of how they communicate, to and you know what I mean? And you get the entire experience on like a micro level, and you can make a decision based off of that, right? And so I did the same thing with the text broker. I sent out like a small 400-word article, write me this article, and then I send it out to 15 different writers and I get samples and I figure out who's really has the right tone, the right writing style and all that other stuff. And like, it's just, I think you just have to do that kind of stuff, right? I mean, it's no different really than hiring in person and having like a face-to-face interview. You're going to get their portfolio or their resume, but then you still have to do an interview with them to figure out whether they're like the right person, right? So it's just kind of the same process, I think.
Yeah. Oh man. It's funny you mentioned TextBroker because I just suddenly remembered that I used to use that all the time when I was doing my SEO days. Like when we tried to just rank websites in Google and make money off ads, I used TextBroker all the freaking time to get articles and stuff written. But that $150 to get 10 people to work with you or whatever, 15 people, you know, there might be people that are kind of averse to spending that money like that. But the alternative, if you get one bad writer, the amount of money you'll spend more than $150 just like for a week or whatever. Your time screwing around, your stress because I've delivered a crap job. Like there's just so many, like the things that go along with a bad hire is just like, there's so many problems for you if you make a bad hire. And that's why like getting like, to get 10 people to 15 people to do something like that and to spend that amount of money, like that's a total no brainer.
Yeah, 100%, man. And you know, like I've even done this with like bigger companies, bigger outsourcing partners. Like there was a copywriting company. I don't know if I should mention them, but they're probably not a big deal. It's a company called Bunny Writing. I think Bunny Writing or Writing Bunny. I always get them mixed up, but anyways, they're a bigger, like they do a lot of marketing. They'll do a lot of advertising. I ran into them and I decided, okay, I'll give them a shot. I gave them a trial run like I do everybody else. And they just bombed it. Like it was terrible. And I said, and I went back and I said, look, like this is not really the kind of quality that I'm looking for. And they apologized. They said, okay, look, we're going to do a whole nother gig for you for free. And like, it's like probably a couple $100 that they were going to charge me. Oh. I said, okay, cool. They gave me a full refund. And they said, we'll do a whole nother gig completely free. So I said, okay, cool. I mean, there's no risk to me, so why not do it? And who knows, it might've just been a one-off thing. So did another gig and it was just, again, it was just brutal. And I was like, really? I'm like, oh man, like, you know what? I was honest with them. I said, look, I was like a bit disappointed because I really wanted to, you guys seem to like in all your marketing and everything, you guys really seem to put a lot of quality into your marketing. So I thought that would carry over into your content, but it would, you know, the quality is just not there for what I need. Right. Mm. And so they lost me as a potential customer, but you know, it doesn't matter whether they're a big company or whether they're just a freelancer. Like, you got to put people through this process, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to filter out a whole bunch of weeds, and you're going to save yourself like a countless amount of headaches and hours and even money, right? And potentially, like, it could really negatively affect your project work with clients. And at the end of the day, like, that's the worst thing that could happen, right? So
so there's only really a few steps to this. You found your freelancer or found your people you might be working with. You've set up a call or something to actually talk it through with them and gauge what kind of person they are, and then running them through some kind of test, whether that be a one-off project or a probation period or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, I haven't been doing this for too long. Mm. So, you know, that process might change. It might become something completely different in the future. That's what's worked for me. And I think the biggest thing, though, within all of those steps for me has been the call and the test.
Mm.
You know, because the call is going to tell me so much. Like, I had a call with when I did the social media management request. I had a guy from Mexico who I jumped on a call with, and dude, I'll tell you, like, the conversation I had with him was night and day in terms of quality with the conversations that I had with other people.
Yeah,
and he actually made it to like the top three of my list simply because he seemed to really get it. You know, he seemed to really be like hardworking. He seemed to know what really matters and things. And like, it's not something you can really get from email. It's not something you can get from a portfolio. You have to be on the phone with them to really get to really judge that, right? And you have to be a good judge of character.
Yeah, and skill. You have to know what questions to ask for those people. Because, you know, I've definitely gone through calls with people before. I'm like, yeah, this person is totally the right fit. And then they've turned out to just be rubbish. You know, well, not rubbish. You know, they just weren't. They weren't the right fit. Because I consider myself a very good judge of character, but sometimes character, there's a lot more to character. to doing a good job than character, right?
That's right.
So that's why when you were talking about skills before, I was like, yeah, no, they've got to have skills too. Like, I've run into a few problems like that before, but I think over time you will develop an understanding of what questions you need to be asking, like the hard questions.
You actually bring up like a really good point there, because I actually think that and there's a lot of people, like really successful people, that advocate for like, do everything when you first start out and then focus on one thing later. And it's because like, you have to kind of get exposed to like what it is that like all these other disciplines do. Like, if you never do graphic design, like if you've never touched Adobe Illustrator or Photoshop, and like, how are you going to be able to tell whether somebody actually knows how to use this software? Uh-huh. And so like, you can ask my buddy Kyle, like I never touched like Photoshop and Illustrator until just recently, like probably in the last year. I took like a Udemy course, I dove into it, and I found the tools to be like really, really useful, but like, it's actually changed my perspective of like, when I look at people's work, I can judge it from like a different perspective, like from an actual skills perspective, using the tools and within that app how to piece things together, how to export things, like, but you're never going to know any of that stuff unless you've actually done it before. Right. Mm-hmm. I've written copy and I've been terrible at it, but I know the process now because I've had to study it, you know, and so like, I think that is like super important too, because I think even as business people, I mean, most business people are a good judge of characters, but I think even as business people, I think we're not going to be able to judge somebody's character or their skill sets properly unless we actually have some exposure to these things, right?
Yeah. And you know what? I've always been adamant. I've said this so many times that like, I'm just adamant that unless you're a developer, you can't hire developers because code is one of these things that people can screw up like in so many ways.
Yeah.
You know, and the difference between a good developer bad developer and a good developer isn't like, you know, they're 2 to 3 times as fast. It's like you know, you can have 50, 100x, you know, because the bad developer might send you backwards and the good guy might do the same amount of work in 1 hour that someone else does in a day, you know, and do it way more efficiently. And it's just crazy. And unless you're a developer, it's really hard to spot that kind of thing. So I've always sort of talked about, I've actually helped other companies hire developers just by getting their code cross-checked by other people that you know are good developers, because otherwise, how do you know, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I remembered that thing that where I had the total brain fart before. and I thought it was quite important, actually, because what I wanted to stress is this process takes time. And a lot of people I've seen try to hire like last minute. It's they need something done now and they're trying to find and vet someone or not vet because they don't have the time, trying to make this process like really fast. I think you need to have people lined up before you really need them in a way, you know, like this is the same problem we have with Content Snare. People see Content Snare and they're like, holy crap, I need that. I have that problem right now because I have no time because I'm spending all this time chasing up people for content. And then they buy it and then they're like, actually, I don't have the time to set it up. And just like anything, it takes time to set up. Like any process stuff, any team, all the stuff can't be rushed. And then suddenly they're like, oh, actually, I haven't had time to use it yet. And they might cancel. And I'm like, ah. Yeah, I need like a tick box that says, I have time to set it up now.
that's funny, man. Like it's true. I don't think you can be sort of like reactionary about it. Like I think you have to allow yourself to take whatever amount of time it's going to take. Right. Fortunately for me, even though I had a bunch of projects that came in September and I needed designers, but I was willing to let it ride as long as I needed to. And I actually ended up getting, I think, 68 applicants for that web designer position. And I mean, I just went one at a time and I took the time, dude. Like, honestly, I think that's something that a lot of people probably wouldn't even do. I think a lot of people, and maybe I'm wrong, but I think a lot of people just will be like, okay, this person looks good. I'm going to add them to my list. And they get like three people and they're like, okay, I'm good now. I went through 68 applicants, even when I found ones that I knew were really, really solid. Because at the end of the day, like you have to do your due diligence. You have to collect as many potential candidates. Because at the end of the day, you know, like that girl that was like a really, really good designer, she got a killer portfolio. Me and her just may not jive, right? Like we may not work well together. She may be, and actually I was talking to a few buddies on Facebook about, you know, I actually send my buddy Kyle a couple of their portfolios for him from a graphic design perspective, like for him to give me his opinion. And at the end of the day, like we both said the same thing. It's like, you know, these people have the best portfolios, but you know, it's going to come down to communication. It's going to come down to other things. And so I didn't want to limit myself to four or five potential candidates that have like good, you know, portfolios. I built out my list as long as I could and knew that it was going to take some time to get through them. And I was going to have some communication with them and all that stuff. Like it's a longer process, but if you do it right, I think you're going to be a lot more successful. You're going to have less of those situations where you're like, oh man, like you're going to have to cut the relationship short or whatever. And at the end of the day, it's going to save you a ton of time and headaches in the future. It's like anything. It's like you measure twice, cut once. And it's like, if you just take the time, like, you know, you're going to be more successful in anything you do.
Yeah, totally, man. Man, this has been super helpful. I think, I don't think there's really any more we need to cover. you've pretty much nailed it. Like especially this last bit we talked about, I think where like really taking the time to find the right people and not doing it from a place of like, I need to fix this immediately. Cause that's pretty much going to set you up for failure. I mean, you might get lucky and I like, that's why I always say when we screwed up the three out of four at the start, the one out of four was pretty much just luck. Actually got right. So I think we can wrap that up because we've been going for quite a while. This has been a good chat.
Yeah, it's been great, man.
So if you had to go back to the start and tell Mini Chris something, like one piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh man. I think, honestly, I don't know. You catch me off guard with some of these questions.
That's all right. I thought that was in the list, but I must have. I got to change my damn list.
maybe it was.
No, that's all right, man. Let me look at my notes.
Oh, actually, no. I think you did ask this question. Oh yeah. Well, actually, there is something that I probably. It's not really something that I would tell myself, but I think it's something that, like, I think if I knew early on, I think I would have been a lot more successful. And it's just like really having an understanding of how to qualify prospects, and then really like dig into the business problems that they might have. Right. I think that takes experience. I don't think there's really a shortcut to it. One of the very first projects that I ever pitched, and I don't know how I had the balls to pitch this, because I was like really early on. I think I had maybe one other website under my belt, and I pitched a website to a sports medicine clinic in my city for $12,500. And it was just a website. But I did it because I knew that there was potential there, but I lost the deal, right? And it was like we had such great conversations. Like even they were blown away by like the conversations we had around SEO and how I remember at one point they even mentioned that, like, you know, oh, they made a comment that like, we've had other people talk to us about SEO, but none of them have ever like communicated it in the way that you did. And you have said things that they've never said before.
Wow.
And so like, I felt like everything was going really well, and I ended up not getting the deal, and I know now why. And it's one of these things that like, I wish I can go back and just, right? But like, I mean, and that's more like the competitive side of me, I guess. It's just like, I don't like losing, right? But
yeah. But why? So why did you lose it?
I think what it came down to is just, I didn't know how to frame the offer properly. You know what I mean? Like people, what mattered to them wasn't what I was really talking about. What I was really focusing on. They did want more business, but they were opening up another clinic, another location, sorry. And the way that I framed my offer was, well, you have an existing client base, and they're a very popular clinic. But I said, you know, you're opening up another office in a whole other side of the city. Like it's completely opposite side of the city. You can't rely on your local clientele to fuel the business in that other location. So, you know, we need to make sure that when we do redo the website, you've got the strategy in place to generate traffic and to start generating business to help make sure that the second location is a success, right? And I thought like that was the way, like that was going to be my way in. Like these guys are going to need the business, going to be concerned that they're not going to be able to sustain that at the second office. And it was the wrong way of approaching the project. Like I needed to approach it from a completely different perspective in terms of the usability that the website would have had for their existing clients. Because really at the end of the day, they were convinced, and I should have realized that they were right in that their existing customer base could have supported that second office. They actually have people from all over Canada flying in to the city just to visit.
Oh, wow.
So that, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it was a miscalculation on my point. And if I would have focused a little bit more, maybe on the SEO and the strategy, but also on like, maybe how we can make this a better tool for their existing clients.
Asking the right questions could have got you to that point, I guess. You know, like yeah, Troy Dean right. talks about a lot about that, like asking, go wide, go deep, and asking why so many times if they're just so sick of you asking more questions.
Now I do that, right? Like yeah. That's now something that I feel like I do a much better job of doing that now. It's really asking the right questions and just being persistent about it, right? Like somebody might tell you something, but they're still not really getting to that underlying issue. Like they're still talking about it on like a surface level, and it's really like asking the right questions and trying to get them to like spill their beans. It's like a therapy session, right?
Totally.
And if you can really dig down into the problems, like then you can approach a project from like a really powerful perspective. I wish I would have known that back then. I think that would have really made a big difference for me, but
that's massive. Awesome, man. I think we'll wrap that up. So where can people find out more about you?
Well, I think probably the best place for them to connect with me is through the Facebook group, because I'm there pretty much all the time.
Sure.
I've set up a link. If they go to www.pdms.ca/supercharge-web-agency, it'll take you to the Facebook group where you can join or, you know, hang out there. There's lots of resources there, lots of good people there that are, you know, willing to share information and learn from each other.
So. And I'll drop that link into the show notes so people can find it and navigate very easily. All right. That's the only one? Well, we'll probably have your social links and everything in the show notes anyway if you want to connect with Chris. All right. Well, man, thanks for sharing all of that. That's been freaking, I hope, very helpful for people.
Yeah, dude. Thank you for having me, because honestly, I followed you for I don't know how long. Like, you've been one of these guys that I've sort of aspired to, and I've
I hold you in high regard.
I hold you in high regard, so I feel very fortunate to be here and chatting with you. You're like a really good guy, man.
Oh man, thank you so much. That's really cool. Like, and honest to God, like I'm just weird. Like, I mean, probably that's the kind of shit that keeps us all going. But when I hear that stuff, I'm like if someone didn't tell me I was appreciated for like 2 weeks, I'd be like, oh, I'm not doing this anymore. Nah, I'm kidding. But it really does, man. Like, when, because it's hard when you do podcasts and blog posts and stuff, you don't really get much feedback. And I mean, in the Facebook group, I'm sure you do, right? Like, people will comment on stuff and you get that discussion going. But there's some mediums, you just throw stuff out there and you never know what's hitting home. So that means a lot, man. It's awesome.
Oh, man. Yeah, no worries.
Thank you. Alrighty. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please head over to Agency Highway. Actually, not Agency Highway. Head over to iTunes and leave us a review there. You can obviously jump over to the website agencyhighway.com to sign up for episodes. And that site's actually probably going to be launched by the time this goes live. So go and check it out. And I will see you in the next episode. Discover how to grow your agency, earn more, and work less at agencyhighway.com. Head over there to get resources from this episode and full transcripts. See you next time. This episode was brought to you by Content Snare. If you're a digital agency or just need to get content or info from your clients, Content Snare can help you collect it on time and without enormous email trails. Give it a try at contentsnare.com.